I understand that originally you didn't want to be in show business, you wanted to be an accountant. What held you back from becoming an accountant?
Well, you see, when I graduated from university, I was only about 3.5 feet tall. And at that time, the public conception of little people or midgets was that while they didn't come out and say so specifically, their idea was that because we didn't grow up physically to normal size, we couldn't have developed normally mentally either. And as a result, regardless of the fact that that I had a university diploma, their first was conception, of course, was my physical stature. And of course, that was their overwhelming impression of a little person. And of course, at that time, all little people that they had ever seen, or small people, whether you call midgets or what, was in carnivals and circuses. And so they automatically classified us as being circus or carnival material.
Were you ever told, gee, why don't you go join a carnival?
Well, let's put it this way. When I graduated from school and I got in to interview the chief accountant of a major corporation, he didn't bother to ask me what my grades were or what my interests were. He simply took one look and he said, "Why, you have no business here. You belong in a carnival or a circus." And of course, that was after spending 4 years at college, was rather a slap in the face.
So, did you ever consider joining a carnival?
Well, I understand I had never joined a carnival, but you see, working my way through college, I worked at various world's fairs. In other words, I had worked at what people would call show business for several summers, so that I was well familiar, well acquainted with the little people, other little people who are spent their lives working in carnivals and circuses, and I knew pretty well what their mode of life and their livelihood was all about.
What was it like? What did you like and what did you dislike about that?
Well, you see, I enjoyed the idea of travel. Always intrigued me, but the hours and the lifestyle of living in a circus or carnival didn't appeal to me because, you see, I was a native of southern Wisconsin, brought up on a farm, and of course, the whole idea of living in a carnival or circus atmosphere was foreign to me. And of course, I had myself completely, shall we say, I was completely trained or otherwise orientated toward a business world. In other words, I had spent my whole college career working in accounting and business atmosphere, and of course, I had never given a thought to making show business as such as my career. And I had just done work at Chicago World's Fair, Midget City in 1934, San Diego World's Fair 1935, Texas Centennial and Cleveland in 1936. To me, it was just a means to accumulate the funds to get on to college.
Why did they have midget pavilions and midget circuses there? What was
Well,
the
in
point
other
of it?
words, for instance, at Chicago World's Fair, for instance, you had an Italian village where they had Italian shops and Italian style restaurants and Italian-style entertainment. They had an Irish village. They had various. They had a Spanish village, and a midget village was just another, shall we say, an entertainment feature, another feature of the Chicago World's Fair. And we had about 135 little people at the Midget City at Chicago World's Fair who were gathered from all over the United States and quite a number of foreign countries. We had entertainers, acrobats, and we had little people who were shopkeepers. In other words, every one of the so-called little midget shops in Midget City or Midget Village were operated by a midget.
Was it a good job, or did you feel it was a freak show?
Well, to me, it was my first job, my first full-time paying job, and to me it was extremely interesting because it enabled me to spend the summer at Chicago World's Fair, to see all the other entertainments, to see all the other features of the fair, and foremost of all, it was the only job that I had found available for which I could earn the means to go on to college.
Of course, we all know you as the coroner in The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
How did you get to be in the movie?
Well, you see, after having spent these 3 years, or 3 summers rather, at these various world's fairs, working with other little people, I had gotten to know possibly 80% of the little people who were in public life. So that when the word came out that MGM was going to make the picture The Wizard of Oz and was looking for a large number of little people to play the part of Munchkins, the word went out through our so-called midget grapevine, and the word got to me that they wanted all the little people to get a hold of. So while I had a steady job at that time, I decided that the opportunity to be in a picture like that would be tremendously interesting. So I just took a leave of absence from the company I was with and made tracks for California, or rather Hollywood. And as it so happened, MGM never did get quite as many little people as they had tried to get, so that every little person who walked in the front door at the MGM studios was hired as a munchkin.
You didn't have an audition?
Not beforehand. The only auditions we had were for the speaking parts after we had been hired as munchkins. In other words, all the little people that arrived or showed up were hired as munchkins, and then the casting director selected certain ones to play speaking parts and some of the other specialty parts.
Now, you had a speaking part. Do you remember your lines?
Oh, definitely.
Could you do that?
I was selected to be the Munchkin coroner. And of course, my speech was, "As coroner, I must aver, I thoroughly examined her. And she's not only merely dead, she's really most sincerely dead."
What did you do to audition for that?
Well, the casting director selected several different little people who he thought might be possible, and had each one read the lines. And I feel that the reason I was selected is because I had done quite a bit of public speaking, both at school and for clubs and things during my school years, so that I had possibly a little better enunciation and more emphatic delivery than some of the others.
What kind of direction did you get? What were you told about how to deliver the lines?
Just to read them succinctly and emphatically.
Now, I think practically everybody has seen The Wizard of Oz at least once, and there's some special effects I think most people wonder about, and maybe you can fill us in on some questions that many of us had for a long time.
I feel I could.
Let's go into some of the things that were done with The Wicked Witch. Now, something that seemed very spectacular to me as a child that would probably seem a lot less spectacular now after Star Wars and a lot of the great special effects Hollywood feats, is when the witch disappears in a puff of smoke at the end of certain scenes.
Well, you see, in the Munchkin Village sequence, the Wicked Witch, the Wicked Witch of the East was killed under the house, and then her sister, the Wicked Witch of the West, appeared in a ball of smoke on the scene, and then, after threatening all the little people and threatening Judy, she walked back to the same spot and whisked away. There was a ball of smoke, a ball of fire, and boom, all of a sudden the Wicked Witch was gone. Well, the secret of that was that she happened to stop, or either she would say, there was little tiny gas jets in the floor, and a big burst of flame came out. And then just immediately followed by a big burst of smoke. And while the smoke was before the camera, an opening appeared in the floor, and an elevator brought her up from beneath. And then a fan off stage blew away the smoke, and bang, there was the Wicked Witch. And of course, when she disappeared, she, after threatening all the little people and Judy with her broom, she nonchalantly happened to be on the same spot on that same elevator, and boom, another big burst of smoke, and down she went in the elevator, and then a burst of flame, and no more Wicked Witch.
That's great. No, were you on the set a lot of times when this would be happening?
Well,
right?
We was our little Munchkin Village set was, of course, rather concentrated. In other words, in front of the city hall. So this was all within a very short distance from me.
Was it ever tempting to laugh or to?
No,
because this really crazy thing was happening.
It wasn't, because we were just intrigued. Let's say most of us, well, I say all of us, it was our first experience in movies, so that basically we were very intrigued by the whole affair, by the special effects, by the lighting and everything like that. So to us, it was a very serious business. It was not a comedy by any means. In other words, as most of the children who saw The Wizard of Oz for the first time, some of them were horrified by the appearance of the Wicked Witch. And so it was not a comedy to them either.
Oh, well, I was very scared when I saw it when I was very young by the, I don't know what to call them, like monkey soldiers.
The monkeys that flew away with the Judy Gal, yes. I happened to have an opportunity to be in that building to see that set, to see how that was done.
How was that done?
Well, you see, the first thing, the monkeys came and they jumped on the straw man and they pulled straw out for him and they said, "We'll put a match to you." And then two monkeys, in other words, which of course were human beings in monkey suits, grabbed Judy Garland and flew off with her into the air. And then as they were flying away with her, we could see in the distance hundreds of monkeys flying around like hundreds of little monkeys up in the air. And when I got in this building and I saw the pile of straw that they had pulled out of the straw man, and I looked up at the ceiling, and from the ceiling were hanging hundreds of little puppets, all little monkeys, hanging on strings from the ceiling, and which had been manipulated by wires or strings from people off stage. So this whole effect of these hundreds of monkeys was created by all these little puppets being manipulated from the ceiling.
Oh, that's great. Now, how'd you do the musical numbers? Was that dubbed in afterwards?
Well, of course, the only part that I actually participated in was the Munchkin City, the Munchkin Village sequence. All this music had been pre-recorded, and all of our rehearsal and all of our steps were choreographed to this music, so that we had to be on a certain spot, on a certain yellow brick, on a certain note. And if we were out of step or off key, the director would say cut, and we would freeze on the spot wherever we happened to be, and they would make the necessary adjustments. And then when the director said action, we proceeded from wherever we were.
Well, that must have been very trying, because there were times when you just had to stand there for a while?
Well, we had to stand there. The joke there was that when the director said cut, the chief electrician also said save your arcs. In other words, the stage set that we were on was lighted by 150 huge arc lamps hanging from the ceiling. And, of course, the arc lamps were very hot and, of course, were also very expensive to burn. So that the first thing after director said cut was the chief electrician would say, save your arcs. And all the midgets or munchkins would automatically say, save your arches. And we'd sit or hunch down on the spot wherever we happened to be, because it was simply important that we had to be in the same foot, exactly the same spot, or on the same yellow brick when the action started again.
That's so. Now the singing was recorded before, and you lip synced.
No, absolutely not. The music was recorded before, but all our voices were recorded in tune with this, in with the music. In other words,
you sang it as it was being filmed.
We were doing the speaking and singing as the thing was being filmed in time with the music, the background music that had been pre-recorded.
I see.
In other words, they were our actual voices that were recorded, but they were mechanically manipulated in the recording so that the men's voices sounded lower in tone and the ladies' voices were made to sound higher in tone. The way that was done, they eliminated the high notes out of the men's voices, and they eliminated the low notes out of the ladies' voices. So, for instance, the three little lullaby girls, they sang, "We are the Lullaby League, the Lullaby League." In other words, their voices, as you heard them, were a little higher pitched than what they normally would have been.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Meinhard Raab, and we're talking about The Wizard of Oz. He played the coroner, one of the Munchkins, in the Munchkin Village scene in The Wizard of Oz. How well did you get to know some of the people who were also in it, like Judy Garland, who's, needless to say, the most famous person within the movie?
Well, we got to know Judy Garland very, very well, because as I mentioned, whenever the scene was such where the director would say cut, and there was a lull in the action, in the actual photography, if we happened to be next to Judy Garland or in a group within a few feet of her, we all joined in a conversation, and we were, very chummy, so shall we speak, because Judy Garland was a very, very open, a very pleasant individual to talk to, and we had many very interesting conversations with her.
Did you follow her career?
Very closely, very closely. And it was a great sadness, a great tragedy to me to hear what happened to her in later years.
Did you have any idea that you would be destined for that kind of stardom?
Well, we had, as you say, all of us were in this movie for the first time. We had no way of knowing that this would be one of the all-time classics. We had no way of knowing how big, and of course not seeing or not being witness to the making of the rest of the film, we didn't know what the rest of the film was like until after it was released.
From what you had seen when you were filming it, what did you think the film was going to be like?
Well, we naturally only saw our script and only heard from hearsay or from other people, such as from the Lion Man and the Tin Man, who came in to visit us, what parts they were doing. In other words, we just had little bits and pieces of what the other action of that followed in the film. So we really didn't know what the complete picture would be like.
What was your first reaction when you saw it?
Amazement. Because this was the first picture ever made in color, completely on an indoor set without any outdoor location scenes. In other words, they had that much lighting, and the lighting effects were such that many of the scenes, such as the poppy field and the woods, all appeared to be outdoor scenes when actually they were all photographed on the set.
Do you see movies differently now than you did before?
I appreciate those that have excellent color and excellent special effects. And, of course, tend to be maybe a little critical of those that are not done so well.
Did you go on to do other movies after this?
No, I didn't, because as I told you, I left the job I was on to go to be in the movie, and as soon as the movie was over, I returned to the job, the position I had, and then when The Wizard of Oz was released to the public, I had the privilege of traveling with the picture and making appearances at theaters throughout the several central states, or rather throughout several theater chains, for a period of about 6 months after the picture was released. So I saw it innumerable times immediately after it was released.
You were traveling as what, the world's smallest chef for Oscar Mayer Wiener?
That's correct. I was traveling as the world's smallest chef, and the theater would have advance publicity saying that in connection with The Wizard of Oz, one of the original Munchkins would be on the set to tell a little bit about the movie. So that's what I did. I appeared in my company little Oscar uniform and told bits and pieces of what were the interesting parts to watch for in the film. And then, of course, after the picture was shown, I visited with the people in the lobby and also made appearances at various local business establishments.
Did you sell a lot of hot dogs that way?
Oh, I sure did.
What was the job that you had left that you went back to after the movie?
I was with Oscar Mayer.
You were already with him.
I was already with Oscar Mayer, and having an opportunity to be in the picture, of course, enhanced my shall we call it, publicity value to the company after the picture was released.
What had you been doing with them before the picture?
I was the same thing. I was the my job was that of the a living trademark as being the world's smallest chef. In other words, they had a company trademark of a little chef on all their packages, and I was the living embodiment of that trademark, just like the well-known Little Johnny of previous years.
You stayed with them for many years.
I was with Oscar Mayer for 33 years, correct.
What kept you with them? Did you ever want to try to go back into movies?
No, I didn't, because the, shall we say, the glamour of movies didn't captivate me to the extent that I wanted to go back, because there just wasn't enough work, enough opportunities to keep many little people working in the movies. In other words, there has never been another movie made that used any large quantity of little people. And, of course, the fact that I had a steady position with Oscar Mayer and had probably greater opportunity to travel. In other words, I traveled almost all the eastern states with Oscar Mayer, which was very interesting to me. In other words, maybe you would call me a travel nut. To some people would. Some people would not enjoy that, but I did.
So you've had a really exciting life. You've had a job that enabled you to travel a lot. You've been a memorable figure in a classic movie, and you're a short person, you're a midget, which is something that most people would think would actually be something that held you back from doing a lot of things.
Well, understand, it kept me from following my chosen profession of accounting originally. In later years, the public impressions and changed, and also the very fact that Fair Employment Practices Acts came into being in later years enabled little people of today to be in almost any profession. They are no longer relegated. They are no longer confined to being in circuses and carnivals. In fact, of all the little people that I know currently, there's probably only 1 or 2% who are still in show business. The rest are all either in professions or mechanical or teaching.
Do you feel, though, that many people still hold a lot of stereotypes about little people?
Well, there are some, yes. There are, I should say, some. They don't make it as flagrant an expression today as it did in years gone by. Many of them may privately still hold certain stereotypes in mind, but it's not as evident today as it was years ago.
You've been using the word little people, and I've picked up on that, and I'm using it too, but should I think that the word midget is a bad word to be using now?
No, it isn't. The word midget, many people, for instance, children would come up to me and say, "Oh, look at the midget." And I'd say to them, "Oh, what kind of animal is that?" And the children would be unable to answer. They had picked up the word without knowing its true connotation or knowing its true meaning. You see, the word midget is not a medical term. That is just a word that has been used by the public. And it is not, as I say, it is not a medical term. And it only denotes a person of short stature, a person who is normally proportioned and is of short stature. But we use the term little people to include all people, all of short stature. There are other people of short stature who are not necessarily designated as midgets.
And that would be dwarfs, for instance?
Correct. That's right. But we don't make a differentiation today by using the term little people.
So, but for someone who's confused, what's the difference between a dwarf and a midget?
Well, a midget is a person who is normally proportioned but short-statured, short in height, whereas a dwarf is usually the ones who have some physical deficiencies as far as the length. They're usually particularly noticeable as short arms or short legs, but normal trunks.
Have most of your friends and close acquaintances throughout your life been short people?
Well, I wouldn't say that. My wife and I consider ourselves to live in two worlds. In other words, we have a vast acquaintanceship among little people throughout the United States. We have a national organization known as Little People of America, which has possibly about 3,000 members nationally. We hold annual national conventions. We have local meetings, local, regional conventions, and we meet quite regularly. And that is one circle of acquaintances. And of course, the very fact that I have not worked in show business constantly, we also have a vast circle of acquaintances among so-called big people. So you see, we live in two worlds.
Mm-hmm. Do people come up to you on the street or anything and say funny things?
Today, when I happen to be walking downtown or going in a business place, be quite frequently, somebody will say, "Hey, aren't you the hot dog man?"
People remember you from that.
Oh yes, it's been 10 years since I've been working as a little Oscar. But of course, I'm still to many people, I'm still stereotyped.
You've done a lot of work with children.
Very much so. I had a great privilege. 8 and 10 years ago, of working with Easter Seal, working with cerebral palsy children, working with them as a special education teacher. And the very fact that I was small and could sit in the little chairs and the little tables with them gave me a big advantage, because they regarded me as another little person, and I had a much greater rapport with them that way than the big teachers who towered over them.
So you feel like it helped you?
It helped me very much in that particular field. And of course, that was my, shall we call it, training or experience in working in educational field, and that is really what led up to my present occupation of working as a special education teacher.
So you're still teaching now?
Yes, ma'am, I am. I'm working in a junior high school as a special education teacher.
That's really interesting. So what about the other kids? Do they... Kids are really funny in terms of giving people a hard time about things.
Well, there are a few...
Particularly, you're teaching junior high school?
Yes.
That's the worst.
Well, the thing is, a few of them will occasionally make odd remarks, you understand. But basically, I am accepted. In other words, to them, I'm known as a munchkin. In other words, they have all seen the movie Wizard of Oz, and most of them, most of the student body knows that I was one of the munchkins, and so that I have a little bit of a special aura about me because I was one of the munchkins. And as a result, I don't get a hard time like I might otherwise.
Well, you've had a really interesting life. I want to thank you for sharing some of it with us today.
Well, thank you. And many people ask me, don't you wish you were big? And I say, absolutely not. I feel I've had as an interesting time of my life as any big person.
I think that's really true. Thank you very much.